The data sets that we're talking about have to do with reference information on different politicians, reference information on some of their campaign finance. We have information on state politicians and campaign finance as well from followthemoney.org. I should probably mention some of the specific sources. We have campaign finance information from Open Secrets. We have state campaign finance information from Follow the Money. We have information on a project from Sunlight Labs called Capital Words, which actually counts words that people are using on the floor in Congress.
Oh, really?
It's kind of fun because you can find out what the word of the day is. What was the most frequently mentioned word on the floor? And that's kind of interesting. We have a data set around some of the major lobbyists that would be available. And we also have a data set of campaign finance parties that take place, fundraising.
Interesting, yeah.
And I think that there's a variety of things that could be made with this information. I think if you were, for example, to take the lobbying information and mix it with census data and mix it with banking information from the bailout, that could start to get kind of interesting. I think that there are interesting applications of vote information from representatives that would be available.
So you're taking information that is really already out there, but you're putting it in an organized, easy-to-use, understandable form and connecting the dots.
The goal is that other people take the information that is out there and put it together and connect the dots and make it easier for people to use. We have focused very much on taking data that and making sure the data is digital so that the computer can use it, and then making sure that it's available in a format that can be machine processed so that programmers can take that information and work with it rather than have to manually type it in to a spreadsheet or a database.
And how difficult is that process? How difficult is it to have data in a way, because everyone talks about transparency and says, oh, well, you just make it available. There is a process that you have to go through to make sure it is in a form that people can use it, that there's standards.
That's absolutely correct, because there's a big difference between how human beings look at information and how computers look at information. A human being is going to move very smoothly between a two-page, with a two-page document that's presented in Microsoft Word, or is presented as a PDF, or is presented on a web page. But those are very different formats if a computer is trying to figure out that information. I think one of the best things that we can see is information that's easy for a human to read. The web has shown that we can put a lot of information online for human beings to read. But human beings are really good at only reading one document at a time, and the web is really good at finding a particular document. But if you actually want to look through hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of transactions that took place, i.e., if you want to look at all the different federal contracts and who got those contracts, you can't really effectively have a human being look at that information. You have to have a computer start to look through it.
Now, Apps for America is your annual development contest.
This is our first year doing Apps for America. The grand prize is $15,000, and the second place prize is $5,000, and there's a third place prize of and there are four third place prizes of $1,000. So we're offering some real incentive here for developers to work with this information. We did a smaller mashup contest in 2007, which was very successful, and I think that we got a couple of dozen applications that people built that were very creative, and so we're expecting, now, this being at the beginning of 2009, a lot of entries and some really exciting stuff. And in fact, some people have already produced some applications, made new websites with the data that we make available.
That's great. And give folks the idea of deadlines. When does this close down? And how do you actually judge these? How do you decide who comes in first?
The deadline for submission is March 31st. You can learn more about it at sunlightlabs.com/appsforamerica, or just Google Apps for America, and you'll get a link to it. All you have to do is essentially sign up to the Google group, build your application, and submit it. We've got five different judges. We have Adrian Halavati, who's the founder of EveryBlock and the Django Project, Aaron Swartz, who starred at Watchdog.net, Peter Corbett of iStrategy Labs, Jene Jardin from BoingBoing.net, and Clay Johnson, who's the director of the Sunlight Labs here.
Now let's talk a bit about the advantage of doing things this way instead of hiring somebody and contracting out and trying to figure out how to do it that way. Setting it up like this with a contest, it sounds like a win-win.
It absolutely is a win-win. One of the things that's exciting about contests is that they allow anybody to participate, and they allow people to come up with ideas from the fringe that you might not have considered as interesting. Whenever you're in a procurement situation, then you're ultimately talking about a small group of people trying to figure out what the right solution is, and then asking contractors to propose solutions to that. When you have a contest, you have the ability for people to do surprising things. You get to try it before you buy it. I mean, you know, there's a big difference. Most of our shopping that we do, from cars to appliances to to our handheld electronics, including and even including the people that we make friends and form relationships, we get to see that before we make a commitment to it.
Do you feel like this is sort of the way people are going to go when they need to get those fresh new ideas? Just have a contest and see what happens.
I think that this is becoming more and more common. I believe that NASA did a big contest a while back. I think it's going to be more common. And one of the benefits for the contest model is that there are a lot of people who have ideas to build things, be it websites or be it alternative, more fuel-efficient cars. They have the ideas, but if you just have an idea, you're not sure if anybody's going to really look at it and take it seriously. But when there's a contest, what you know is that there are going to be people seeing what you built. And that creates the mere fact that you know people are going to be seeing it creates a huge incentive for that latent creativity to actually get called upon and people to decide to build it. If you're not sure anyone's ever going to take your idea seriously or even look at it, it's a big disincentive to put your time and energy into it.
And it also seems like if you know that this smart group of folks is going to look at this and do a real assessment, there's a real making sure that you're doing something that adds value.
Exactly, because there's a real one of the other benefits that you get out of these contests is that you get to see it. You might not have the complete solution, but you might have a really interesting piece, and other people get to see that particular piece.
And do you post all the proposals up there? Is it all very?
Well, there are no proposals, which is the other nice thing. Yeah. We don't, you know, the other nice thing about a contest is we only have to look at what people succeeded at doing. We don't have to spend. So there might be on a given contest 1,000 people who start, but only 100 people who actually finish and submit something. But everybody has learned something through that experience. And we don't have to spend the time up front trying to pick the 100 people who are going to succeed from the 1,000.